Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Bentz.
And I'm George Affleck.
And it's time for...
Luke, I am your father.
Unspun.
May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th. My dad was born on May 4th.
So really?
Yeah, it's fun. You know, he's no longer with us, but, you know, every time May 4th comes around, it's like a celebration of my dad.
I'm going to think of your dad. Are you doing something special for May the 4th, you Star Wars nerd?
No.
I am. Do you want to know what we're doing?
No. Well, yes, of course I do.
Of course you do. We're going to watch Rogue One.
Yeah.
A New Hope. And Empire Strikes Back.
Okay. Well, I'll
starting at noon. It's not over yet, George. Wait. And then we've pulled out the best of bridge, and we've chosen, with two other couples that are coming over, four appetizers from 1977, which is when Star Wars A New Hope came out. And we're going to dine all day on 1977. Think cold spinach dip in a big round loaf of bread, a little meatballs made with Campbell's mushroom soup, that kind of thing.
That is ultimate.
This is the content people tune in for, George. This is the content.
You know, I was 13 in 1977, so I peaked Star Wars. Like, that was, if you were like a little kid, you're a little younger than me, quite a bit younger than me. But for a 13-year-old boy, 12-year-old boy, that was like, that movie was, we went to drive-in at the Hillcrest at Langley.
And amazing.
It was, we had a convertible, sat in the back of the convertible and watched this amazing, crazy movie. It was like, what is happening?
Right, not knowing what you were in for. We were wildly, as a family, my being the youngest of that family, my stepbrother and sister, my stepdad, my mom, and my brother and I were in California. And we were on our way to go to, you know, Knott's Berry Farm to ride the Revolution. Like, it was one of those family trips. And we went down to the local theater and, not having any clue what was on, went in, sat down, and it was A New Hope. And my life changed forever. I bawled my head off at the end because it was over. I was like, where all my friends are leaving? Luke!
And just anyway. In the plane, going into the trench of the that was just like, never been seen before. Like,
stay on target. Dying. Stay on target.
Yeah, that's right. Stay on target.
Red member. Anyway. Let's talk about staying on target here on Unspun Podcast, because we are the number one BC political podcast. Well, let's say longest running, anyway.
And weekly. So
weekly.
Longest running weekly BC political podcast. Let's go with
that. Woo, there's a category. But we're going to actually start. Okay, so there is an encampment now at UBC. There is now an protest encampment at McGill University. We've been watching unrest across the United States at Ivy League universities. UCLA, big clash with police there. Your thoughts on what we're seeing unfold in this really historic moment? You texted me the other night while the world was basically watching hockey, right? Getting ready for the Canucks game. And you're like, are you watching this? And I'm like, yes, I am. Explaining to my son what the heck we're seeing. Explain it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Obviously, I wasn't watching hockey. Sorry, everybody. I was watching CNN just at that moment when they stormed into in New York. And this is not, this, we have not seen this since 1968, this kind of thing. Universities are generally exempt from this kind of problem. Well, they have protests. It's kind of the point of being a university. But this time they went too far, I guess. And it was just like, what is going to happen here? But it actually went pretty well. So luckily nobody got hurt. There was no, you know, crazy violence. It raised the question of who are these people that have, dug themselves into the inside the building, basically vandalized the building. When is protesting going too far? When is vandalism? All that kind of, these questions that come up, and it's a, you know, it's a gray line, really. People are saying, you know, they're passionate about this issue, but when they seem to apparently have been taken over by, you know, a lot of these people were the whole movement from, was it 10 years ago now? The 1% and the 99% and all that stuff.
Occupy Wall Street.
A lot of the same people. A lot of the same people, they say. So it's like, what is going on here? What, have we jumped the shark on what the issue is here? Because I think it's, people are getting confused about what the, you even look at these interviews, and the students are refusing to do interviews, which is with media, which I always find like, really? Like, so you're, you care so much about this issue, you don't want to talk to media because why? So the media is the enemy now. It's just, it's just.
I find that to be really wild. But in watching CNN, because I was watching CNN up until the moment that the Canucks game started. And one of the things that one of the pundits was saying, on top of the fact that, okay, you know, freedom of speech goes up to that line of, and even crosses that line of saying things that are things that one or many might wholeheartedly disagree with. It is your right to say that out loud. But when you target people or attack a certain group with what could be designated as hate speech, I'm not suggesting that that's what was happening at Columbia University. I'm just saying these are the parameters that were being laid out. The reason why the university then decided to call the New York Police Department to come in was because protesters and people who were exercising their right to free speech suddenly then were vandals who barricaded themselves into a building, also things that cross a line. But it wasn't until one of the security people in Hamilton Hall had a go between protesters. I'm struggling with the terms to use now because, but that was where the line was crossed for Columbia University, because it's already interrupting school. It's already postponing possible postponement of graduation. You know, there are young people who cannot attend the school for fear of being targeted because they happen to be Jewish. I'm not suggesting that there aren't Jewish people who are protesting there. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Watching it unfold and the understanding of why the police were called was laid out as, you're not allowed to break into a building and destroy property and then threaten somebody who works there. That's where the line is. If you want to sit on and sit in and say your things out loud with a loudspeaker or make your points, whatever. And then they started showing the arrested protesters on the buses and everybody with their faces covered, right? And they were talking about how the January 6th insurrection and how law enforcement utilized media footage and footage on people's cell phones from that day to identify the people that they would go then arrest, that some of these protesters are trying to avoid being identifiable in the event that they land in a courtroom. So that's why there were so many cops. There was like one cop for each two protesters that were arrested, and their body cams recorded the whole thing. Like, it's really, it's unnerving. You know, I wasn't around when the protests were happening around Vietnam. I was, you know, I've learned from history. I've listened to my elders. I also listened to my 16-year-old. And I bet you, I'm not sure if Quinn's into this and what his opinions are, but I know Brady has very, very defined opinions here. And, you know, we had a very eventful setter dinner this year with our very bestie friend family who we do Hanukkah and Passover and all of the Jewish high holidays with, because this did come up. Because everybody's stressed about it, and it's there's a lot. I don't pretend to know what's happening here, George, but when it comes to what we witnessed at Columbia University and what we're continuing to see unfold in places like UCLA, now here in Canada with McGill and Francois Legault reacting to that and basically saying, police, get in there and do what you're supposed to do, how different Canada is from the U.S. Like, let's talk about that, like when we're watching. Well, what's happening here in Canada?
Well, politically, it's such a nightmare from us. Like, when you talk about spin, and then how you manage this from a communications point of view, because exactly how you're just dancing around this, and we both because
I don't know.
We're talking about it's one of the most complicated issues on earth. You know what's happening in the Middle East has always been, and it's such a complicated conversation to have that you almost in politics just like barely don't talk about it. And so when these kinds of things rise up and you're required to respond to it or react to it, that's what gets really complicated. And you see most politicians just shy away from it and not want to talk about it at all.
Right.
And then when they do make tough decisions, they get attacked. And they don't make decisions, they get attacked. It's like literally a no-win situation politically. And right. You can't communicate your way out of this. You really have to just stand where you believe, you know, you can. And I think sticking to the rule of law is probably the smartest way to go. Like, look, they've passed that point of what it's freedom of speech. Now it's violence. It's dangerous. And it's you know, creating, you know, wrecking, destroying buildings. This is not a protest anymore. This is a riot, and we have rules about riots. And then there's the whole camping thing, which we, of course, are very used to in Vancouver. And this seems to be the new thing. Well, let's set up a campsite and we'll stay there forever. And who are these people and how come they set up a campsite here? There's professional people who get into this. This is proven that are funded.
That's what they said at Columbia. Yeah. They said of the whatever, what was it, like 750 people or whatever, a significant percentage of those who were camping at Columbia University were not students.
And that's fine, but, you know, then they're all hiding in masks, they say, because they don't want to get, you know, put in jail. But if you're doing stuff, then maybe you should be in jail. So protest.
That's a tough one. I want to be really clear to punctuate this from all of the things that you and I have spoken of. If this is your first time listening to Unspun Podcast or watching us here, George has actually lived. You've lived in the Middle East. Like, you've seen this firsthand.
Yes.
And over the course of us discussing this, because neither of us are experts, but you've stood on the ground of and understand the geopolitical situation better than most.
They're very grassroots level, literally at the grass. I mean, I was picking tomatoes working with Palestinians who were side by side with me before on a Jewish moshav. So our boss was the Jewish farmer, and there's me, Australians, Palestinians. And so we talked a lot about this. And so I certainly sure saw both sides of the argument literally every day. And it's very complicated, and you have to be very careful. And you sympathize with both, but you can't really empathize with both. Not me, anyways. I'm not Jewish. I'm not Palestinian. It's a complicated relationship. Been going on for a while. You know, looks like they're heading towards a two-state solution. But that would have been, this is a long time ago when I lived there, but that would have been unheard of back then.
Well, today's news that we saw, that they are now building that portable port, because this whole, you know, area in Gaza that you can only access through Egypt or through Israel, really, but has like a ton of coastline with the Mediterranean, which has begged the question, where is everybody? But it was because there was no infrastructure invested in creating and building ports. So now they are erecting one so that aid, like the World Kitchen, can get, you know, humanitarian relief to the women and children who are definitely at risk of famine and suffering. And I think everybody in the world can agree that unnecessary, you know, you can call them collateral damage if you want to be tough-hearted about it. But I cannot imagine a struggling family being held responsible for the actions of the government that they perhaps would never have voted for either. Like, there's a lot to this that I think when I'm talking to my kid and he's trying to be like, but what? I'm like, but also Holocaust, like, there are lessons here. You know, these are all very scary words, but nobody wants to see more conflict and death. So let's hope that there are cooler heads and common sense that can navigate us out of this.
You throw out a federal, you know, national election in America, right? You know, this is all, you know, feeds into the challenges and the opportunities and all those things. So it's such a mess, and it's
a mess.
I don't see any resolution until the election's over, really. I think this is effective chaos that it's creating for mostly the Democrats, because it's a tough one for them, because they don't want to, you know, it's complicated because they don't want to look like they're supporting. Whatever, you can see the way Trump's using it to his advantage right now. So, because he doesn't, but if you're in power and you're the president right now,
He talked today, unscheduled, not on his plan, and he came out and was like, "Here's the deal: you are not allowed to, you know, cross the line from peaceful protest and freedom of speech into, you know."
He's also
committing crimes, which is what he calls vandalism and harassment and abusing others. And let's bring the chaos back here closer to home.
Segue to something else. Like, he also spoke about marijuana and cannabis and loosening up the rules. So he's making so let's move us to more later, maybe local stuff, because in Canada we've had cannabis legally for a long time. So,
and the sky didn't fall. Remember, just before it was fully legalized, people were like, it's going to be mayhem. And you know what?
It wasn't. But when we changed the rules on decriminalization on all other drugs, which was reversed this week by EB.
Yeah. He's coming on. He's coming on Steel and Mads this evening in studio to talk about that in particular, because we have discussed this, and last week we predicted that there would be a turnaround, a flip flop, if you will. I'm certain that BC United and the Conservatives would call this a flip flop. People within the BC NDP would call it an adjustment to the request of now restricting and recriminalizing illicit drug use in public spaces because of exactly what we talked about last week, George, and the fact that you can't crack a beer at the beach, you cannot light a cigarette at the beach, but you can shoot up heroin, smoke your meth, whenever you want, wherever you want. And I think those unintended consequences of trying to destigmatize went on way too long, frankly. I mean, I've seen such a change. We've seen such a change in our city. I don't want anybody to die. I don't want people to die of tainted drug supply. I mean, I don't have the answer to this, but
hardcore drugs is not the same as marijuana, please. I mean, let's just get one thing straight here. This is not the same thing. Criminalization of the gangs and all that stuff that get behind hardcore drugs are significant, and you can't take it lightly. And I feel like this NDP government took this too lightly and we'll just decriminalize, no problem. I mean, it's way more complicated than that. Even cannabis, it took us years to get to that point. Even look at Vancouver, we had, 130, cannabis shops that were illegal. But that also helped the transition towards legalization to see how we could work it. You know, it was almost like a test case, process to show that maybe it can work. But we're not talking about the same kind of substance at all as heroin, crack, and meth. And come on, it's just not the same. And if you want to argue me, then you shouldn't drink wine either. Because you could argue, well, then wine is the same. It's not. It's not.
But it's regulated, right? Like if there was a tainted booze supply, there would need to be action on that. And did you see that bit about how there was a study apparently done that Dr. Henry allegedly has, or it has come to light? I don't know the details. I've not read the study, but the study was that decriminalization was not actually the way to go, that harsher criminalization of said illicit drugs, but it was kept low level in the government. It was a bit of a surprise to David Eby when he heard about this from an opposition leader during question period. It was one of those like, what? And didn't our former mayor write a book congratulating himself about decriminalization?
Yes, it's best. I'm sure it's a bestseller, just like he was a best mayor.
Who pats themselves on the back for something that was started, immediately began to fail, and now is failing so badly that we've let down some of the most, marginalized and.
There's no example in the world where it has worked. There really isn't. I mean, people talk about Portugal. And it's not really the same thing. It's just you have to have the multiple things in place.
Yeah.
All the time.
Pillars. Pillars.
Yes. All those things have to happen simultaneously. Otherwise, it doesn't work. The table falls. And that's what happened over this past year. And if you live in Yaletown like I do, you saw it firsthand, the chaos that has now continued to a certain degree, but certainly has cleaned up a lot just over the last week because of this.
Really?
Yeah, it's a way. And the closure of the safe injection site in Yaletown, not safe at all. No, didn't seem to be any management of that spot. It was just chaos.
See, I like the idea of having a safe place for people who are addicted to use.
Sure, but build it properly.
But you,
that was like a
that's
half
exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Not that has a chop shop in front of it.
It did.
It did. It was scary. I've gone to the Overdose Prevention Society down on the downtown east side. I've been there numerous times. Sarah Blythe and her team running that, trying to save lives and doing their very best. I've made donations of clothes and food and water when it's hot and rain gear when it's not, and blankets and what have you. And I don't feel at risk when I'm there. I mean, I don't feel like I belong necessarily, but it's not built for me. But the one in Yaletown, I would cross the street to go around. Yeah. I felt like this is an unsafe space.
And they migrated to the park where my kids play. I grew up in Yaletown. We played that park, and it became not safe. And they were so it was just naive of this government to think that they could just turn a switch and this all would be solved through decriminalization. It's not that easy. So we've learned our lesson. We'll see, but it certainly will be a good election issue. But NDP will probably win because of the split on the right. So it's just, I wonder if...
Well, Pierre Poilievre, can we talk a little bit?
Police.
What's that?
Surrey. I wonder if the flip-flop on the police next in Surrey.
No. Do you think so? That's a good segue. I was going to ask you about Pierre Poilievre and some of the things that he's been doing or saying, but let's stay local because we've only got a few minutes left here. Brenda Locke, now she's taking her case to the Supreme Court, right? That started this week. But also she wrote a letter basically denouncing the fact that SPS members attended a meeting where Mike Farnworth, Solicitor General and Public Safety Minister Mike Farnworth, was in town and held a meeting. And she was basically saying that these officers left Surrey at risk and da-da-da-da-da. And it was quite the letter. And I was reading down the thread, and it was posted by the police union. And then, it was noted that this is a fairly regular occurrence because earlier that week or earlier that day, forgive me, I can't remember, the RCMP had a meeting that SPS covered so that they could, it happens all the time that you have to, but the way she just came, she continually comes out of this looking like she is ill-informed.
I disagree. I think she keeps poking the bear, and I think that's her intention. She is just keeping this sucker alive to just really annoy the NDP. I can't help but think this is intentional and is spearheaded and potentially supported by the center right political parties provincially. It's benefiting them. It makes the government look weak. Certainly now you could argue with the decriminalization issue and now the Surrey issue, as far as a political party fighting crime, not so good, the NDP. Not a good track record, and that is very politically opportunistic for the other parties to benefit from.
So that political gamespersonship aside, what motivates the mayor now, if that's true? So let's allege that that is the case, that she is being used as a pawn to poke the bear. To what end? Will she be looking to run provincially for the center-right, right-leaning parties, and that's what's in it for her? Because how does she then take it back to her community and her voters and say, I've done what's best for you? Because, man, I listened to Brenda Locke on with Jazz Johal on CKNW, and then Jazz opened up the phones, and it was caller after caller after caller after caller going, enough of this, enough. Like, it's $8 million a month extra of taxpayer dollars. That's a lot of money.
The logic behind it, it's hard to say, but I would say a similar experience I had when I was in council and for the entire time they were in office until the NDP won, where Vision Vancouver and Gregor Robertson were constant thorns in the side of the BC Liberals who were in power for most of the time the Vision Vancouver was in. So they acted in a way as supportive opposition to the NDP provincially. Obviously, Gregor Robertson, former NDP MLA, the Vision Vancouver, very NDP, all the people moved to Victoria when the NDP took power. So there is a movement that exists politically focused that to the detriment sometimes, and it certainly was the case in my experience in Vancouver, where I would sit there going, why are you guys spending all this time fighting the province when you should be working with the province? Who cares what political party?
Or your constituents.
It only benefits us to work with the party that is in power in Victoria, not against them. That's not going to get us anything. And of course it didn't, because then why would the BC Liberals reward a party in power in a city that is fighting you? So, but why did the division do it? Well, it worked. In the end, the NDP got control and they weakened the government. They poked at them. So I'm not saying that that's what Brenda Locke is doing, but it certainly is doing that. I think to the NDP, it's looking like they just don't have control of something they should have control of, and that is bad for them. Why Brenda Locke's doing it? Why Gregor Robertson did it? Is it just based on philosophy? Maybe you just don't believe in the NDP or you don't believe in the BC Liberals, so it's innate. You just defy to the detriment of your local community. Perhaps.
More. I think that's why I like Brad West.
Maybe it's more managed. I don't know.
I think that's why I like Mayor Brad West. because he actually does things in his community first, and then he takes on the other things, and he does it fearlessly because he doesn't, he would appear to not care whether or not he's reelected as mayor. And there's, I have great respect. There are other mayors that, you know, I could rattle off a list of. I get more and more a poor taste for those who use their, you know, lower level governmental office to do things that are out of their jurisdiction. And I mean, I'm not even going to bring up the park board, but I just did. But like when the park board starts fighting the environment, you know, or in a truth and reconciliation, it's like parks.
Important, but really not the issue here.
Super important.
Mow the lawn.
We're already covering that over here with the department of that, right? We're doing study upon study after study and research and coming back with another study, and staff are talking about it. We'll get back to you on that. We don't need the people who are supposed to be cutting and watering the grass. I mean, come on. Well, so that's what I guess is what pissing me off about Brenda Locke, is that I'd like her to just be the mayor, right? And being the mayor involves, you know, putting forward the strongest possible law enforcement she can. And that would be having the current police of jurisdiction and the RCMP working together with the Surrey Police Services members who are there and putting all of those officers out to protect Surrey. But that's not happening. It's a lot of blocking, and it's frustrating to watch. And I don't even live in Surrey.
By a lot of politicians. It's
a lot of politicking.
You know, I think I don't think there's going to be any resolution before the election. And I think she sees the opportunity that they need, if they want, they're going to keep offering her to shut this down before the election.
Do you think, though?
But, you know, eventually,
November 29th is when it changes. That's when the police of jurisdiction becomes Surrey.
And you think that's going to stop Brenda Locke from being contrary?
No, I think she's going to continue to be contrary, but I also think they're going to make that happen and then probably make it so that the mayor isn't automatically the chair of the police board. And I think there's a good argument that the mayor shouldn't necessarily in any municipality be the chair of the police board. You know, but the people smarter than I are making these kinds of calls. I am looking at the FIFA budget and my eyes are bulging out a little bit.
That's the NDP at work for you right there. Yeah, they don't know how to budget. It's ridiculous.
That's $581 million.
Double what was estimated. This is the challenge.
Seven games?
Simultaneously, a survey came out about Summer Olympics in 2036. Okay, well, that's worth talking about, because guess what? That's like 14 years away. We are throwing this thing together so quickly. I was in office in 2017. It came to the table. Vancouver wanted to support it. The province said no, so it was shut down. At that point, financially, you know, moving forward would have been very, very, if we hadn't done it then, and moving forward any time further, and this was a conversation that we would have, would be very, very challenging. And we're seeing that now. When that decision was reversed, and that the province here decided to move forward with FIFA, it's a money pit, and it's because they have a timeline that's tightened, which makes it impossible to raise funds or get donations or incorporate all the stuff that you need to do to underwrite this. There's no time, there's no people, you just can't do it. So as a result, you just got to keep rubber stamping stuff and say, okay, I guess we're doing this. Another 100 million, another 50 million. Because you have to. It's the rule. You sign with FIFA. We're screwed.
It was what made it turned down in the initial 2017, as you're saying, was that FIFA said, you're going to need to give us a blank check. Like, we're not even going to tell you what the budget is. You're just going to need to continue to do the things. You're going to need to build an extra power plant in case there's a power outage. You're going to need to completely refurbish BC Play Stadium, replace elevators, create grass field infrastructure and water systems. And you need the ramped up security and da-da-da, like all the things. And George, all I can think of, and you know I'm a sports fan, obviously, 17 years of sports broadcast. It's in my blood. I love it. Of course I love soccer. Of course I love the World Cup of football. I love it. I want it. But at the same time, I'm asking myself, all of those tradespeople that are going to be doing all of these renovations for a sporting event could also be building houses and buildings and places and spaces for people. And those trades are at a deficit beyond right now.
But there's also the argument you make, I always make, when it comes to massive like infrastructure decisions or these kinds of big events, they do galvanize you to get stuff that should get done.
I agree.
Expensive. So
I agree.
Stadium has to be done.
You're right.
Anyways.
I love the Olympics so much. Really, I loved it. Yeah. I'm further to what you're saying, though, I feel like this is like being thrown together and doubling in price, and we're not even there yet. It's going to be way more expensive than this, but at least it's less than building a museum.
Yeah.
Find George on Twitter at George
_
Affleck, George _ Affleck. I'm at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance on the social media, all across the board. That's it. That's all we got. Jeez, we got some heady topics in today, didn't we?
Around the world in 30 minutes.
Around the world in 30 minutes. That is Unspun Podcast, unspunpodcast.com. Like, subscribe, leave comments, get in the conversation, share with your friends. Say goodbye, George.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.